This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, and today I have with me on the line Tyler Brulé, Editor-in-Chief of Monocle. Now, Monocle is one of the most recognizable publications to the business community here in Malaysia. It's a wonderful to have you with us this morning, Tyler. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So let's talk a bit about Monocle magazine. Something that I found interesting was that Monocle does not put out regional specific editions of its magazine, not like other international publications which might tailor their content towards Asia, for example, or North America or Europe. Was this a deliberate editorial choice?
Absolutely. We felt in 2005, 2006, when we were developing the business plan for the magazine, we thought this idea of all of these regional titles, and of course, as we know, you could look to the likes of Vogue or Forbes, and, I mean, all kinds of major media brands have regional editions. We thought in a globalized world that didn't make sense. There's plenty of room for it. But we thought if someone is touching down in any number of cities, they want to pick up a magazine that instantly connects them to an international discussion, and that can be a political one, or it could be cultural, business, design focused, all of the topics that we cover in the magazine, which oddly doesn't sound that unique, but it is. I mean, I would say that we are the only title of scale globally which works like that. Even the likes of The Economist will reshuffle their pages. You start up front with Asia if you happen to pick it up, of course, in Asia. It's the magazine would be recut if you pick it up, in North America. So I would say our approach is a very unique one. And likewise, of course, we want to do the same thing, not just in print, but we do the same thing digitally. And like you, we run a radio station as well. So there's a number of other things which also play into this global dialogue.
And what's been the reception to that? Because Monocle, one of the things that Monocle is looking to do is that it's looking to expand, correct? And one of the areas of expansion is here in Southeast Asia, an area that arguably has a very different sort of cultural context compared to what you would find in the US and the Western parts of the world. So have you been able to bridge that cultural context and achieve that globalized ideal?
Absolutely. I mean, we're here 13 years later, and we know in a volatile world like media, it's great to be around that long when we know things come and go. So yes, the model is working. And of course, we find pockets where it starts to, of course, grow and resonate more. Maybe in some parts of the world, things tend to go a little bit more flat. Certainly what we're going through at the moment, which has been incredible to watch, is the power of audio. And of course, you see this in so many markets. You're podcasting your program. You know, we started a decade ago with a single podcast. We now run a 24-hour-a-day radio station. And certainly in the midst of what we're living through at the moment, people love the connection of human voice. They want, of course, be informed. They want audio to really be an accompaniment for them. So there's a variety of different things that we do, which, of course, find sort of different levels of weight and punch around the world. If we certainly look from the perch of Malaysia and looking out from KL, for example, we have an incredibly dedicated audience. And a dedicated audience, if you look around, the entire ASEAN region, I mean, APAC in general, it accounts for over 25% of our sales now. And that's just pure copies either going via subscription to people's front door or people, of course, picking the magazine up on newsstand. But then also beyond that, I mean, the amount of people who get our daily bulletins, the amount of people who are tuning in to listen to audio, or even, of course, shop via our e-commerce site.
And across those different platforms that you mentioned, both the magazine and Monocle 24, which is your podcast, how has the reception been different across them?
Listen, it's very much market by market. I mean, of course, I would say the reception has been positive and continues to grow across everything we do, but it does move at a different pace. And I would say the audiences are quite different around the world as well. I would say in Europe, which probably accounts for about 50% of our reach in terms of sales, again, you know, subscriptions, newsstand, and then, of course, digital traffic as well. I would say our reader is a little bit more mature. I think you would find that that reader is largely male. They're mid-40s. But you know, if anyone has been to one of the events we've done in Bangkok or Singapore, you would see a much younger audience. You would see more female readers, and it skews very differently. And I would say likewise, if you go to North America, it's a bit more of a split picture as well. I think the reader is a little bit younger in the U.S. than they might be, certainly in Europe, and maybe also the divide across the sexes is maybe a little bit more even than it would be here. So I think, you know, people are attracted for the same reason, no question. But I wouldn't say the world is flat in that sense. And it is always intriguing to meet your readers, your listeners face to face, and see that, of course, there is a bit of diversity and change depending on where you are in the world.
So all this time, Tyler, you've been talking about this globalized ideal that a Monocle puts forward. But is that globalized ideal going to continue to be attractive to wider communities? I mean, we've seen politically figures like Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, populist leaders, coming into power, signaling a shift arguably towards a particular brand of nationalism away from the globalized society that we enjoyed previously. Will this jeopardize your audience and your readership?
Well, I mean, at first, I think it's there's not a question of before and after. So I think if you talk about previously, I think we are there are certainly whether we want to talk about hundreds of millions or billions of people who want to be part of a global community. But if I think if we take a step back with that, I mean, one thing which is, I think, very measured and maybe slightly nuanced about Monocle's take on the world is that, yes, it's global. But at the same time, I think we've always talked about, you know, what is that local intersection as well? So, of course, you know, you might want to you know, be working with someone who does amazing bags in Thailand, and you want to sell those in your store in Zurich. But at the same time, you also want to be able to support local craftsmen. You want to be able to support local brands as well. One thing we've been talking about for a very long time, you know, with or without a globalized world, I mean, part of that is about striking a balance. And I can say, if you go all the way back to 2007, we've been talking about the importance of also doing things at home. We've been talking about the importance of the supply chain from the get-go. And now, of course, where we are right now, it reveals that if we only want to go for the lowest possible labor costs, the wheels come off very, very quickly. As to you know, the likes of the leadership of Mr. Trump or Mr. Johnson, again, I think that Are those two leaders speaking to a Monocle audience? Probably not. Sure, we have lots of people who I'm sure are Trump voters. I mean, we know that, but they certainly don't agree with every element of the policy. But if they're business people, they might think, well, I had a choice last time, and if I'm running a business, he's out there to support me. He's out there for the economy, and maybe I don't agree with foreign policy positions. So I'm going to choose to vote for him. I would say likewise, the same might go also for Prime Minister Johnson as well. But I would say that if you met most Monocle readers, and if Mr. Johnson is now recognized, of course, for being the champion of Brexit, I would say that most Monocle readers, were very much in favor of remaining. They're very much believers in the European project. Now, that's not a globalized project, but it's certainly a project about belonging to something bigger, and about interconnectivity, and about, of course, flat trade and the free movement of people.
I'm speaking with Tyler Brulé, editor-in-chief of Monocle. Up next, we're going to be asking the question of what place does politics play in Monocle magazine? So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Tyler Brulé, editor-in-chief of Monocle. Now, earlier, Tyler, we were talking a little bit about the globalized ideal that Monocle puts forward. You know, what kind of a place is it going to have in what seems to be an increasingly nationalized society, global society, in fact. So now the question I have for you is, what kind of a place do political views have in Monocle's publications and its podcasts across platform?
Listen, again, it depends on what we're talking about, what corners of the world. We're pro-business. We are very much pro-cities. I think that we look at a world where you have potentially a great connection between the world's major metropolises, which is often very, very different from what is happening in those capitals of the same countries. I would also say that we have quite a libertarian view as well about how we look at cities. We think that the world is maybe a little bit over-nannied at the moment. We believe that people need to take their self-responsibility. We think that societies which actually have very, very clear guidelines, but at the same time also allow people maybe a bit of room at the edges to interpret and do things is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think that's a view that we like to take. We don't believe that cities should be silent. So often, so much of the debate around great cities is, there's so much noise and there's so much, ruckus on the streets. Well, there's also then a place called the countryside or there's small villages. If you don't like noise, then maybe the city is not the best place for you. So I think we want to be able to argue sometimes in favor that there needs to be life at the edges. And sometimes life can be a little bit messy. And on the flip side of that, of course, you do need strong social capital as well, which is why we do believe in things like apprenticeships. We do believe in things like national service. So these are the other sides. And for some, that sort of creates a bit of a confused picture because you say, well, if you believe in national service, well, then you're super right wing because you must be militaristic. Well, we would say no. Actually, having national service does a number of other things. And we have a story about it in the upcoming issue, looking at both the national service on a military level, but also on a civil defense level in a country like Switzerland, where it's incredibly important, certainly during a crisis like this, where you suddenly have a whole layer of society who you're able to mobilize. And that doesn't mean mobilizing at arms. It means being able to drive food to old people's homes, drive ambulances, look after the borders, do many, many other things. But of course, at face value, people would say, well, that seems sort of, very hawkish in terms of a stance. But I think that's something that we believe is very, what is very important with all of that is strong social capital. And I think we see right now countries with a strong social capital seem to be doing reasonably well out of this crisis.
All right. Now, you also mentioned, a post-COVID life. What's going to happen after this pandemic for Monocle itself? What kind of changes are you anticipating once eventually this pandemic is a thing of the past?
Well, I think we have to continue to chart the same course. The magazine was born in 2007, and after, three or four issues, we were, confronted by certainly the advance wave of what turned into the collapse of 2008, 2009. And I think what's interesting, if you look back at that period, that was, in many ways, as a very young magazine and a magazine which had very few digital extensions at that time, we really had to survive as a monthly magazine. What was interesting is we became a title which was very much, I would say, the voice for people who had lost their jobs. You might have been working for a major bank in your region. You might have been working for a major retailer in North America. Suddenly, you found yourself without a job. And I think what we wanted to do at the time, and I think where we came good on things, is we became a beacon for those people who were looking to reinvent themselves. And a lot of that turned out, in many ways, for people to say, look, I've been in a corporate world, or I might have been in education, I might have been doing any number of things within a large infrastructure. Maybe it's time for me to go out and hang out my own shingle and maybe follow my dreams. I've always had this, burning idea to do something. Well, now I'm out of a job, and this has really propelled and pushed me in that direction. So I would say for the last decade almost, that has been an area that we've been an area of focus. So looking out beyond this, I don't think that we see ourselves swerving and terms of what our output is. I think when we look at entrepreneurship, we do two magazines devoted to entrepreneurship now. One is coming out next month. We have a new title, and then another one will come out this autumn. We, of course, have got a dedicated weekly program focused on that. So from my perspective, I think what we need to be doing is shining a light on best practice around the world. We need to be there to inspire people. Of course, a lot of people, certainly, for much of your audience, you're working from home. We've suddenly sort of found ourselves in this disjointed world, and in a very odd way, our I would say the fantasies and dreams of so many people have also come true, because we've been talking about this brave new world where, you know, people can balance their lives and be at home, and they and all of these digital tools will connect us in a wonderful way. But what are we doing now? I mean, so much of the story is about mental health. So much of the story is about people being isolated. So maybe this great digital world that we've been talking about, you know, isn't so fantastic after all. We realize the importance of actually going to a workplace every day. We realize the importance of being able to converse over a cup of coffee and toast in the morning with your colleagues. We realize that there is real power and currency in intuition, and we want to be there to, I think, have a balance between those two things as well, because we're quite, you know, we're digitally skeptical sometimes about many things, and I think, you know, we want to make sure that we're a voice, not just sort of running away with, okay, this is all going to be fantastic, and everyone's like, oh, the workplace is also going to be, you know, completely transformed. Let's be honest, some companies will transform. A lot of companies are also going to go back to their old habits. You know, when this is gone, it'll be a very ugly memory, but I can see lots of places falling back into old habits. I mean, that's often what we do as humankind.
So as a periodic Monocle reader myself, I've always wondered how much of your content is actually advertorial in nature?
When it comes to advertorial, it's pretty clearly marked. I mean, advertorial we see as advertising. And since the very beginning, we've always had a relationship with brands, probably actually which goes back to almost even pre-Monocle, when we were doing Wallpaper Magazine. You know, we established a way of working with companies which maybe didn't have the biggest budgets. They didn't have the funds to go and work with the biggest advertising agencies, maybe the biggest media buying firms. Mm-hmm. And we said, look, we can develop a style of creative for you. We can also clearly mark exactly what it is, so our readers know what they're looking at. And that, you know, when we started, I think then became a very large part of what we do. So some issues of the magazine, advertorials might be 20%, they might be 30%. And we try to keep the magazine, I would say, in most months, and it depends month by month, that we're probably 60% editorial, and then 40% is commercial.
And media companies around the world are also suffering during this period because, you know, while everyone is staying at home, nobody's going out, nobody's going to newsstands and picking up editions of the Monocle. Do you anticipate that you may have fewer customers purchasing advertising space during this period? And if so, how are you going to weather that?
Well, for sure. I mean, we've seen, you know, when airlines are grounded, when airports are closed, when hotels are shuttered, when luxury goods stores are of course, also closed down during this period. I mean, that means that there's also there's no advertising. Now we're very fortunate that we have some brands who also have a longer view. Maybe they're family companies or family-owned businesses. And of course, there's some very, very big multi-billion dollar businesses in that space who have stuck with us. But of course, we've lost advertising like everybody has. Within Switzerland, they're talking about an 80% collapse in advertising. Mm-hmm. And that's television, that's radio, that's print. It's not been that case for us. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's rosy either. So in terms of mitigating that, that means also developing a relationship with either new brands or looking at how we can do things with our existing partners in a new way. So you'll already see over the coming weeks some of our big partners moving into audio, some of our partners moving to our daily bulletins as well. And then for upcoming issues, it's how do we look at bigger projects? Because I think also companies want to tell a different story. They might want to run a traditional advertising campaign, but I would say probably less and less, because maybe some of those campaigns that were shot 3 months ago, they're not going to look relevant right now. And so that's maybe where we will then do advertorial projects with them to help those brands tell their stories in a very different way. That's one thing. The other thing is, of course, you rightly raised the point about newsstand. I mean, if I head out to KL Airport, and there's less traffic, and maybe the newsstand or the kiosk is operating at reduced hours. Yeah, that's a problem. And so we've also had to refocus, of course, our distribution. And when I say distribution, that is newsstand. And what that means we've certainly done a big shift and a push towards subscriptions. And so we've seen huge subscription growth. We've really said to our readers, we love the newsstand. I'm not a big subscriber myself. I love going to the newsstand. but at the same time, you know, if people love their Monocle, then they want to be able to get that delivered to their doorstep. And so that's been a very big push for us, and one which is working incredibly well. And it's, you know, that's with or without this crisis, though. I think that we've seen bookstores all over the world are challenged, and whether they're independents or big chains. So even without this, we've been sort of focusing on how people who want the print edition of the magazine, then they're probably going to, or we're going to have to probably get it to them directly.
And speaking of subscribers, I think you had 18,000 subscribers in 2016. So how many more do you have now? And do you have any targets that you can disclose to us?
We're at about 23,000 right now. It's been a big effort to get it out there. I'm not going to reveal full business plans, but you'll see in a few weeks we're looking at something new, which will be an enhanced premium subscription, print and digital. There'll be a more baseline subscription as well, also print and digital. But we're also going to launch just solely digital. So maybe you live in Hobart and maybe it just takes a little bit too long for the magazine to get there. It doesn't take that long to get to Hobart, but maybe you only want to get the digital edition. Or maybe you live in and are working in three places and you don't want to have three subscriptions going to three different residences or offices. You'd prefer to have something digital. So we are looking at something new. It's not just going to be a recut of what you get in print. It's not just going to be PDFs that you can flip through. It is going to be something which is, I would say a little bit more part executive summary. It'll be slimmed down. It'll be developed in a way as well, which responds to being on a backlit screen and not on nice German paper.
Now, Tyler, as a last question, I was curious to know what would perhaps be next for you, because you're an interesting figure yourself. You worked as a freelance war correspondent. You were shot twice by a sniper in Afghanistan. And since then, you know, in 96, you launched Wallpaper, which was a design and lifestyle magazine. And now it's been 13 years since the launch of Monocle and 18 since the launch of Wing Creative, which was the advertising agency that still currently is behind Monocle. So what are the plans on a personal level for you?
Well, of course, the times that we're in, it does force a bit of a rethink. But at the same time, it also just it makes you realize also the value and the service that you deliver. Personally, listen, I might be on one side, I'm the CEO and I own the majority of the business and all of those things. So yes, I am a businessman. I'm a journalist at heart, and I love being able to write columns. I like editing the magazine, but I also like seeing it come together commercially as well. And I think that we have, you know, in some ways, even though it's been 13 years, I think, God, there's just so much more that we can do. So, you just have to stay tuned for the next chapter and we'll have to talk again.
All right. Well, I look forward to it, Tyler. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I've been speaking with Tyler Brûlé, Editor-in-Chief of Monocle. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.